And our next guest today is Dr. Sarah Yogave. Dr. Yogave has focused much of her research on dual career couples and the struggle between career and family demands at different life stages. Heaven knows there are lots of those. The third edition of her book, A Couple's Guide to Happy Retirement and Aging, will be out very soon. And this is the third edition, as I just said. I love the title of her first edition, which is For Better or Worse, But Not for Lunch, which I think cleverly expresses the sentiment of many retired couples. She helps couples find alternative ways to stay engaged with life after their career, whether or not they choose to continue working. Dr. Yogave earned her PhD at my alma mater, Northwestern. Today, she will be sharing her insights and advice about making your marriage thrive in retirement. Welcome, Dr. Yogave. May I call you Dr. Sarah?
Absolutely, and I'm delighted to be here.
Great. Well, thank you so much. You know, I often hear things from couples that I'm working with, like, we used to have a great relationship, and now all we do is bicker and fight. And you make a great point in your book when you say, I'm going to quote, many couples are frustrated and disappointed to discover that marriage's golden years can tarnish a marriage. Why do you think that happens?
I think that people devote a lot of time, attention, money into financial planning for retirement, but they really neglect is the psychological planning for retirement, which is equally important. And what I find out from my research and from working with couples is that there are two misconceptions that exist, and that's why people don't engage in psychological planning. The first one is people are saying, we had vacations before, we traveled, we know how to do that. It's not a problem, and they're not aware that the marital dynamic in retirement are going to change in the same way that the birth of the first child changed marital dynamics. And people need to take that into account. The second one is that what I was saying is that we know how to do leisure. We know how to do vacation. And they see retirement as one extended vacation. And they don't realize, I talk in the chapter, first chapter in my book, about stages of retirement. And the first stage of retirement that almost everybody goes through is what I call the honeymoon phase. Now I have all the time in the world. I can do whatever I want, whenever I want to do it, no obligation. I can put the photo in the albums. I can clear the attics. Whatever, we can do the travel that we always wanted. And that stage, the honeymoon stage, lasts anywhere between 6 months to sometimes even 2 years for people. But very often, I don't want to say always, but very often comes the second stage, and I call it the disenchantment stage. And that's when people realize, okay, I did this and I did that, so now what? I might have another one-third or one-fourth of my life left in front of me. And if I don't know what I want to do, very people get depressed, get upset. We know that about one-third of retirees experience depression in the first 2 years. Marital satisfaction is very low. And unfortunately, that's another thing that I have in the third edition of the book, about 10 to 25% of particularly men resort to increased alcohol consumption as a way of coping with the depression, which, as we know, it's not the best way to cope with that. So those two misconceptions contribute a lot to why the marriage suffers. In retirement, definitely in the early years of retirement.
You know, you said something very interesting, and I certainly see it too. During this disenchantment phase that you're talking about, I've certainly seen people say, question whether they make the right decision to retire at all at that point. But I also see them, and I'll bet you do too, see them saying, oh, the reason I'm unhappy is because of my relationship. and they start blaming each other for being unhappy, whereas they're not realizing what you were just talking about, that this transition is a normal phase. It's got really probably nothing to do with their relationship, but it certainly does tend to impact it negatively.
It definitely has to do with the person himself or herself, but the relationship can help or hinder. That particularly as we age, our significant other is very often the most important person to us. If that person is not very supportive and understanding, it can increase the problem. And I think that what that takes us maybe is to the difference between men and women and how they, respond to retirement. And we have very conflicting result from what we know from the research about it. Women on one hand have larger social network of friends pre and post-retirement, and that makes it easier for them. Men, on the other hand, don't have that many friends. Many times the friends are their colleagues, and as they retire, their ties kind of like get weaker, and they rely more and more on their wife to be their friend and support, social support. But what we also know is that, very interesting, professional women has the hardest time adjusting to retirement. And that would bring me to the next point, that I don't think that it's just a matter of the gender, male, female, but it's a more matter of whether the person that was employed had a job or had a career. And what I mean by job was the work, employment, because they needed the paycheck, but their ego, the sense of self-esteem, was not connected with them. People that have career, a lot of their self-esteem is coming from that. And when that is taken away, it can be difficult for them to find out, okay, so who am I now? What's going on? And for professional women that probably are not crazy about the typical female housework and stuff like that, that adjustment is harder, because this generation of retiree is still people that were raised or in some way adhere to traditional sexual stereotype with regard to division of labor in the home. And many times they are expected to love and resume cooking and baking and all that kind of stuff, which they don't. And that might contribute to why, for professional women, the transition is the most difficult one, more than traditional men, surprisingly.
That's very interesting. And I suppose part of it also goes back to what you were saying, is that typically women have wider social networks, but I know from my own situation, my social network was largely, just like a man's was, tied to the people that I was dealing with professionally. And so just like a man, that's not there.
Yeah, and it's difficult.
It's very difficult, because we tend to depend on it, as you said, more than men do.
Yeah. I have a whole chapter in the book devoted to friendship and the importance of friendship and different kind of friends. And I talk there also a little bit about the difference between men and women with regard to the social network and friendship. But what we know is that a good social network contributes to longevity and health and support. So it is an important element.
Yeah, and research is certainly supporting that more and more. And I think that part of, back to the losing your social network that's tied to your work, it's appearing to me that the social interaction is even more important to people in this stage of their life than it was prior, regardless of how wide their social network was. It just seems to have taken on a even deeper dimension than it had before.
It could very well be. I think that before, the social network was more dispersed. You had colleagues, you had friends, you had family members, And now it's shrinking. So the one that you have become, of course, much more important.
Yeah, you touched on something a minute ago that is, I think, is also very important, and that's the whole issue of household responsibilities, and as importantly, each person's assumption about who's going to do what. So how does that arena play into a couple's retirement equation?
Oh my, housework is a very, very important topic.
I had a couple sitting in my office one time that, you know, started out with this, you know, we have a great relationship now, all we do is bicker. And as the discussion went on and on, you know, she got more and more like this, more and more like this. Mm-hmm. And pretty soon she said, just out of the blue, she said, "Why do I always have to do the laundry?"
Right.
And he stared at her in absolute disbelief. He had no idea what she was talking about. And she said with equal enthusiasm, or emphasis, mm-hmm. "I'm retired too."
Right. And you see, housework is very gendered. And men usually do the seasonal work, the outside work, but not the daily grind of the cooking and, you know, all that kind of thing that needs to be done on a daily basis. I oftentimes say to couples that foreplay starts in the morning when he emptied the dishwasher, and not at night when, you know, they start caressing each other. So housework can express caring, can express control. What I mean by caring, I know that you like this kind of, I don't know, food, and I made sure that you will have it. Control, because I didn't buy the kind of food that you like, I bought the one that I like. So it is a loaded area throughout people's marriages. And as they reach, when they raise children, they get to a point that they have a somewhat balanced relationship. In retirement, it all changed because there are different expectations. If she's expecting more equal a division of labor around the housework, but he doesn't think that it's necessary or even worse, would feel somewhat emasculated mm-hmm. if you start doing female works around the house, then it would create a lot of resentment. We didn't touch, or maybe we should talk a few minutes about what happened when people don't retire at the same time. But very often, not, you know, in cases where he retired first, she continued to work, maybe because she's younger, maybe because she took some time off to raise the kids and want to finish certain project and certain achievement, or maybe for financial reason at getting to, you know, social security age. So she leaves in the morning and he is flopped by the TV, and she comes back and nothing was done. The laundry was not done, dishes were not made, and she's expected then to start doing her second shift of the housework. Of course it would cause resentment. So I talk in the book, I have chapter 8 about the housework, about different scenarios. Housework can be also a place that creates a lot of marital satisfaction. I don't know, they both start cooking together and learn new recipe and going to cooking class. So it's an activity that they do together and they enjoy it. So that can be a plus for couples that don't expect much change and continue the same scenario as they were throughout the years also can be okay. But for couples, when there are misaligned expectations, like I talked about, she expect him to pitch in more and he resent it, but it can be just the opposite. He decided to take on cooking. She always wanted him throughout the marriage to participate more. So now he is taking doing more of the cooking and more in the shopping, but she feels at that time that he is stepping on her turf, and she doesn't like that at all. Or he started cooking, but he's so disorganized, or his way of cooking is that the oil is out, the flour is out, the sugar is out, all the pots and pans are out, and the deal is that whoever cooks doesn't clean. And she has so much work cleaning after that, that she said, you know what, don't do me any favors, I will do the cooking. And he is dismayed. So there is a lot of misaligned expectation, and it's such a small item, trivial items, that people think, oh my God, that cannot create disharmony. But it does, because it's daily. And if people don't have a way of resolving it peacefully, it can linger and it can get worse and worse. And you know, it needs to be addressed.
You know, you said people think of it, those things, those issues, as being trivial, and that's very, very true. You know, Dr. John Gottman, who is a real thought leader in this whole issue of relationship dynamics, studied the interaction between couples on a day-to-day basis. And and one of the things that in his research he found is that relationships really are based on those little everyday interactions. And so while who's going to do the laundry might seem like a trivial issue, when it creates resentment and irritation on a daily basis, that can't help, that absolutely spills over into what the whole relationship looks like. Isn't that what you find?
Absolutely. And John Gottman, who is a fantastic, leading person on marital satisfaction, talks about turning against and turning away. And each of these scenarios, let me explain. Turning toward is that they're both sitting and reading a newspaper, and he's telling, oh, I met today Lucy. And she put the newspaper down, and oh, Lucy, what's going on with her? And it's trigger a nice conversation between the two of them about how lovely time they spend with Lucy, and they start reminiscing about the past, and it's definitely creating a connection. So that's turning toward. Turning away is that same thing, they're both reading the paper, she's saying, I met Lucy today, and he's saying, and continue reading, and then nothing happened. So that's turning away. And turning against, which is the most negative one, same scenario, I met Lucy today, and he is saying to her, how many times I told you, I don't want to hear anything about this B word or something like that, and get very angry and very upset. And of course, it's created disconnect. So the same thing happens when couples have a conversation about many, many small items like that. And definitely the housework items can be, how to load the dishwasher can become, do you load it that way, or, God knows what, I've heard so many different little, that at first you think, what, you're fighting about that? But it's like what divorce lawyer telling you, that couples with multi-million dollars, estate fight about a little pen. Because it's not the item, it's the symbolic meaning, the emotional, psychological meaning that is attached to that item that is important. And that's what couples need to address.
And I think that's the point, need to address, because, we were talking before about these, people assume that things are going to continue as they were, or they assume that it's the wife's job to do this or that, or that it's the husband's job to do this or that. But when you don't discuss it, when you don't come to a meeting of the minds about whose responsibility it is to do what, or how they're going to work together in terms of doing little things like the housework, that's when people's assumptions, I assume that you're going to do it all the time. You assume that it's not my job to do it. And what happens? It erupts into turning against as opposed to turning toward each other.
Exactly. And that's why it's so important to have a calm conversation about it and to talk about expectation. There is no rule about what's right and wrong.
Oops, sorry.
And what is right for the Smith might be totally wrong for the Joneses. So each couple had to find their own balance and homeostasis.
So Dr. Sarah, a few minutes ago, you were talking about some of the challenges when people don't retire at the same time. And certainly the housework issue is one of them. What are some of the other challenges that couples face when they don't retire at the same time?
The challenges or the difficulties is that, as I was talking about the different stages, so, you know, let's say the husband retired first, because it's a common scenario, a frequent scenario. By the time he gets into his disenchantment stage and he's there, she is about to retire. And then she goes through her honeymoon stage and she's not that supportive to his disenchantment and displeasure. And then he starts, kind of like complaining more and more about her. So that makes it very difficult because then eventually she is going to go through that same stage. So the overall for the couple, instead of it becoming a few months, it can be a year or 2 years. Another issue that comes up is, let's say they both had a goal or a dream to go and live in an ashram for 6 months, or to do some extensive travel in an RV. And one is retired and they have to wait patiently for the other one. And that can create resentment. So while it's difficult for couples to time it so that they retire at the same time, they need to be aware that it won't be smooth. Overall, as we have in any transition, for many people, transitions are difficult. So you have to be prepared that there would be some difficult times. That's part of the process of the adjustment. And when it's not at the same time and people have their own pace, it might be a little bit more difficult than otherwise.
And so I think your point is a very good one, that it's like everything else. When you're aware that something is likely to happen, when it occurs, it's easier to deal with it than if you think that there's something wrong and you're not aware of that this is a normal thing that requires some attention.
Right. You know, people come with the expectation, wow, retirement's supposed to be the golden years and they live happily ever after, and we are not. So what's wrong with us? And, you know, I bring the statistic, I don't have it handy right now, the great divorce phenomena of people in the 50s and over that are getting divorced. And in part is because they have unrealistic expectation about what ought to happen and how it should be. And if they are patient and are willing to work through the friction, then very often they can have in a much better relationship and more intimate and more cohesive than they had before.
Yeah, and I've certainly seen that happen. Couples that felt that they were on the brink of divorce and being able to work through that, that difficult time ended up far happier than they ever were before in their marriage.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a very good example of that, of a couple that I worked with. He was a consultant, and by nature, his personality is that he's very introverted. Mm-hmm. So part of his work, and he was making good money, he was, most of the week he was away, was traveling to, he was in a big consulting, one of the largest consulting company in the US, and he was traveling a lot. So very often, Monday through Thursday, he was not at home. And while she was craving more intimacy and more connection with him, she understood he's at work. So of course the weekend was focused on them, but it was a lot to do with what needs to be done, activities and all that kind of stuff. He retired, and she always wanted more emotional connection and intimacy. He retired, and she expected, oh, now it would be our time. But get what? As a thinking introvert, he was very content being away, and he didn't realize that she's missing so much. So that they couldn't take it anymore. They came and they start seeing me. And that's when the difference between them start coming clearer, and they were able to become so much closer than ever before. So it's an opportunity to increase the connection rather than to say, okay, it's not working, let's stop it.
That's a great story, Dr. Sarah. And you know, it reminds me of something that I see all the time as well. And that is couples, particularly couples that have had busy careers and they're very involved in their careers, and they don't have as much time together as they would like. There are things about their relationship often that need to be addressed, but because their schedules are so busy, they're easily swept under the rug. And now it's time for retirement and they have more time together, and all of a sudden those unaddressed issues come floating to the surface. Absolutely. Right. So I think that's what you're saying. It's another thing about being aware that if something like that happens, like the couple that you were talking about, it does not mean that the relationship's over. It means that the relationship needs some attention, and probably with a professional to help you.
Sometimes with a professional, sometimes, you know, I'm a big believer that people can help themselves, and people that have kind of like reluctance to see a professional, you know, they can help themselves, maybe my book, you know, you know, exactly. Can't take, you know, not miss the opportunity to try to pitch it. But yes, work and of course raising kids provide wonderful distraction from the emotional disconnect that is in the relationship. So when those are going away, usually the kids are out of the house by the time couple retire, you know, people retire. Hopefully they are launched and they are doing well. And now when we don't have work, then we have to focus on what's going on between us. Furthermore, we all know that, you know, there is the big elephant in the room, that we spend more time together. And that can be a blessing, or that can be horrendous. Again, we need to align expectations and talk about what is it that we expect that will happen. How much time will be together? How much time will be apart? As you said, no wonder the title of the first edition was for better or for worse, but not for lunch, because we need to create space for each other. Because if we are together like Siamese twin, what are we going to talk about? We know about each other, we're about everything that we did, and there is nothing to talk about. So creating space is important. Also, people's personality is different. So the fact that I want to have a few hours away from you doesn't mean I don't care for you, I don't love you. It means I need to take care of my own needs. We had scenarios of a husband who was very dependent on his wife for emotional support and friendship. He was didn't have too many friends. She was playing mahjong once every other week and with women friends, and he insisted on coming. And as you can imagine, it didn't work very well with her friends that she was playing with. Or he insisted that she will come with him to Home Depot, whatever the hardware store where he liked to spend time there. And she was bored out of her mind, but he insisted on the togetherness. So it's very important to align expectation about how much together, how much time apart, and not take it as a sign of I don't care for you. We have different needs that need to be addressed. You know, it's, I sometimes tell people, why don't you custom design what for you would be an ideal day, an ideal week, an ideal month, so you can see the difference with what you wish to and what is there. Another thing that happened, and that would be a good way to start the conversation without any blame. Another thing that happened is that when we spend more time together, we become more aware of different habits that people have, or different idiosyncrasies that when we were spending time just an hour or two in the evening together, or weekend, it wasn't that noticeable. But now that we are 24/7 can be together, it can be very annoying. Like one thing is that, a couple that I remember is that she had a habit in the morning, they had three daughters, and she called each of the daughters to find out what's going on with their life and stuff like that. And also she was calling one good friend and telling her what's going on. So it was basically four telephone conversations that were about the same. And he was saying, my God, why do you have to talk the same thing blah, 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 with each one? But that was her way of connecting with people. But he was very dismayed and sometimes even angry about that, not taking into account that that's her routine, that that's something that she's been doing for a long time. And that you don't like it, go do something else. You don't have to listen to all the conversations. So likewise, she was annoyed with other couples of his habit of, I don't know, whether watching TV or other habit that he has that she didn't like. So becoming more aware of that means also creating greater tolerance for that, because the personality differences comes up. If we were talking earlier about housework, it reminded me of a couple that I worked with. She was kind of like very artsy, and he was a quality control engineer. For years he was always talking why she was not organized enough and he needed her to be more together, you know. So one day when she was playing tennis and it was a long match and stuff like that, he decided that he will help her get organized. And guess what? He organized the pantry. And he organized the pantry alphabetically. That for him made a lot of sense. For her, she had a different system of here are this and this is. You can understand that it didn't go very well, and she was very upset. He thought, oh, she should thank him for helping her being organized, but she was very resentful. So here, a personality difference that was there all along throughout the marriage that can be much more noticeable when they are living more time together that needs to be addressed and handled.
How would you recommend that couples address a situation like that when those personality differences become so irritating? What can they do to remove it as an obstacle to their own intimacy?
I very frequently say to people, do you want to be right or do you want to connect? I don't think that when it comes to organizing the pantry or to spending time, there is a right way and a wrong way. I think they are both right. And we need to create enough tolerance and space for each person to have their way. It might not be the way that I particularly like it. I don't know. I hear nowadays about people that become news junkie. And they listen to this channel and they need to hear CNN, what CNN has to say, and NBC, and you know, and they spend 2-3 hours on every day listening to different news channel when the other person is, God, you know, what's going on. I have a chapter in the book about technology, and you can look for different things, you know, on the internet, and it is providing for some people an escape from not being together. So being aware that it's not the item, it's what the item represents, and that you need, you can't always have your way, even if you think that your way is correct, and you need to trade. Okay, I tolerate you having this annoying habit, why won't you tolerate or do something for me in return, you know, that would make us feel that the relationship is equitable. I don't mean equal, but equitable, that there is a give and take that makes it feel that it's fair. And I think that that can work a long way.
That's great advice. I bet some of those issues come up as couples address where are we going to live. So what are some of the things around that ought to be considered as you go through that discussion?
Right. Relocation comes up for people often, and they really need to be clear about the reason they want to relocate. Is it to escape the cold? Like, I'm right now in Chicago and it's very, very cold. So I can understand people that want to avoid that. Is it to be a new family member, new children? Is it because you want to live in a state that has lower taxes? So people need to be aware of what are the reasons for that. And I strongly suggest don't do the relocation in one move. Do it gradually. Go there and visit there for 2 weeks. So then rent a place for a month. You need to develop a support network of friends. You cannot rely only on your kids. How many times we heard stories about somebody that moved all the way to California to be next to the kids, and guess what? That to be next to the daughter, the husband got such a phenomenal promotion and moved all the way to the East Coast or to Hawaii, and they were not in a position that they were able to move again. Also, as we age, our medical care is important to us. And for many people, having a doctor that knows us, that we have a relationship and a history with, is important. So in the new place, are you going to find as good healthcare and a person that you connect with as you did? So all those issues need to be taken into account when people think about relocation.
That's great advice. It really is. You know, we've been talking about some of the things that are in your book, and I know you've mentioned a couple of things that are new in this edition. Are there any other issues that, you know, you as you've been studying this over time, since your first edition, which I've forgotten the year now, but what else has come up?
Oh, I have three new, beside the general update to all the chapters, I have three new chapters that were not in the first or the second edition. The first chapter is what I mentioned about alcohol consumption. And, Bachrach even wrote a book about it called The Hidden Epidemic. And it's something that people need to be aware. The amount of alcohol that we can consume as we age is much lower than what we used to consume before, and people has to be aware of that. And there are a lot of other factors that go into account. If we live in a retirement community, who is the social network of people that we are socializing with? All that greatly impact alcohol consumption, and mostly among men, but also among women. I also have a chapter about the impact of technology. I think that in this day and age, we cannot avoid technology. It can be a wonderful tool to connect with a family member, with grandchildren, through Skype, through Zoom, through whatever. But it can also be a huge hurdle when you have many times one partner who is much more comfortable with technology and the other one is relying on them, and that becomes a nuisance, or one partner who is so much into Facebook and social networking and all that kind of stuff that the other partner feel neglected. So all that needs to sometimes be discussed for people to be aligned. And the third chapter that I have there is that we have surprisingly new statistic about what I call cohabitation, new alternative to marriage. the fastest growing segment of the population that is not married and living together is not young people. We thought about cohabitation as young people living together either to save money or as a way to test the relationship before they get married. But what we see is that it's growing phenomenally. For 1.2 million people age 50 and over in 2000, it's like a 3.3 million in 2013. And 15% of males 55 years old and over, and 12% of women 55 years and older, that are not married are in cohabitation or what they call living apart together, couples that see themselves as a couple, but they don't get married. There is a lot of reason why they don't. They want to avoid the legal complications. They want to have an easy exit out, but they want the benefit of that strong relationship provide, the support, but without it. So that's another chapter. And another thing that came, that we find in about this population, that's why I prefer to call it retirement age people, because you can have somebody who is 70 years old and you never know, he working or not. People come in and out of the workforce, but it's a phenomenon that it's growing immensely. And I think that it's a new alternative to traditional marriage that we see.
And as you say, for many people, that is the best solution for a lot of reasons.
Yeah. Right. So
you have sent some really great tips about how a marriage can flourish in retirement. Can you share a couple of those with us?
I am the strong believer that psychological planning needs to take place, and the sooner the better. Start the conversation even before you retire. Be prepared, as I said before, that there will be some difficulties and tension, but they can be temporary and short and create even a stronger relationship later. It can be an opportunity to have the marital bliss that was not there because you finally handle hidden issues. When I talk about share expectation, I want you to be aware that you need to share expectation in details. Like one couple that, I'm aware of, they were sure, we want to travel and we want to travel in an RV. That was a dream for both of them. His idea was to rent an RV and to travel in Europe for a year. She was horrified when she heard that she likes the RV thing, but she thought, we'll be 2-3 weeks in France, and then I'll fly home to be with family, and then we'll fly to Italy, and we'll be a month in Italy. And, you know, her idea was to go in and out and in and out. She could not bear the idea of being away for so long. So while they thought, we are so aligned, we want to travel and we want an RV, the devil is in the details. So you need to address that. I strongly believe that you need to engage as you age. I really like the way it sounds. And you need to stay active physically and mentally and socially. I'm a big believer of volunteering in some cause that you like, that would get you involved. You need to be aware that your relationship, we didn't talk about money, and the psychological meaning of money and how our relationship with money change in retirement. I've seen people that used to be big spenders and now they are concerned that there isn't enough. I have a whole chapter in the book about the psychology of money that I really strongly suggest for people to become aware, because again, it's not a matter of right or wrong, it's a matter of finding a viable alternative that work for all of them. Another issue that we didn't talk about is that it's really important to become aware if people retired, is it a forced retirement or is it a voluntary retirement? By forced retirement is sometimes, you know, the company was bought, or, you know, a division was, you know, dismantled, and you had to retire, and then you didn't want to. I'm not talking about people that were completely fired. But the psychological meaning and how you deal with your own retirement as emotionally would be very different if you wanted and you were looking forward to that for whatever reason, versus somebody else that it was put upon them. Oftentimes we have women that have to retire because there is a sick family member and she is expected to be the caretaker. So there is so much that needs to be addressed, because the homeostasis and the balance that the couple created over, I don't know, many years, if it's a first marriage, shorter year, if it's a second or third marriage, all that is up for grab and needs to be discussed. And when people talk about it in good faith, 9 out of 10, they can absolutely reach a better place.
That's such encouraging news. And you know, we've been talking about your book throughout this whole conversation from my perspective, primarily because it is such a great resource.
Yeah.
I seem to have a copy of it back there. Can we
see? Right. Yes. Yeah, so it's called A Couple's Guide to Happy Retirement and Aging. And the subtitle is 15 Keys to Long-Lasting Vitality and Connection. And I really believe that vitality and connection is very, very important as we age. And the book is going to be out in February, March of 2018, so feel free, you know.
And should be able to get it on Amazon, correct?
Oh, absolutely, yes, yes.
Good. Good. And I know you have an active practice in helping couples with all kinds of issues. And if you're like me, you see people remotely, just like we are remote right now.
Right.
So how can people get a hold of you? How can we get in touch with you?
Three ways. Of course, there is always the old telephone. And my telephone number is 847-470-1925. They can reach me by email. The email is real easy. It's my name, sarahyougev@yahoo.com. And I write Sarah with no H. So it's sarahyougev@yahoo.com. And I also have a website, www.sarahyougev.com. So either one of these three ways, I'd be more than happy to respond.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. It's been a very enlightening and enjoyable conversation. So thank you very much for joining
us. Thank you, and good luck with your retirement.
Thank you.
The listener.
Thank you.